How do you remember what you remember? And how do you forget everything else? In the new book, Why We Remember, Unlocking Memory's Power to Hold On to What Matters, Charan Ranganath embarks on an exploration of memory's profound influence on our lives. The book presents a new perspective on memory, showing it as a dynamic force that shapes our identity, decisions, and future. Charan is a professor of psychology and neuroscience and director of the Dynamic Memory Lab at the University of California, Davis. In his book, he combines personal anecdotes and scientific insights to illustrate how memory functions and how we can harness its power for personal growth. Here he is to share five of his big ideas.
Hello, I'm Dr. Charan Ranganath, professor of neuroscience and psychology and director of the Memory and Plasticity Program at the University of California, Davis. I'm happy to share with you five key insights from my book, Why We Remember, Unlocking Memory's Power to Hold On to What Matters. I've been studying the neuroscience of memory for over 25 years, and over that time, I've had to shed most of my preconceived notions about what memory is supposed to be about. I wrote this book to reframe the way you think about memory and make you aware of its far-reaching influences in every aspect of your life. Here are some of the most important ideas that I get into in the book. Number one, memory is not about the past. It's about the present and the future. Now, when I tell people that I study memory, people generally say, "Maybe you can study me. My memory is terrible." And sure, I get it. Whether it's being unable to recall someone's name, misplacing your keys, or even losing track of what you were just talking about, forgetting sucks. But it's also normal. If there is one thing that memory research has shown, it's that most of our experiences are doomed to be forgotten. And that's okay, because our typical complaints and worries about everyday forgetting are often rooted in misconceptions about what memory is for in the first place. Memory is selective, biased, malleable, and sometimes unreliable. And that's because our brains were not engineered for total recall. They were not designed for the sole purpose of remembering the name of that guy who was at that thing. Memory is a resource for our brains to extract what's important. That is, the information that helps us make sense of an uncertain and ever-changing world. We use memory to reason, plan, and imagine, to communicate and connect, to forge our identities, and to ground ourselves in time and space. When we treat memory as if it should be a comprehensive archive of the past, we end up with unrealistic expectations and feel perpetually frustrated. When we look at memory as the valuable resource that it is, we can free ourselves from the shackles of the past and instead use the past to direct us to a better future. Insight number two, memories are dynamic. When we recall a memory, we don't replay the past as much as we imagine how the past could have been. That means our recollections are shaped by our beliefs, our goals, and our perspective, much like a painting reflects an artist's unique perspective on their subject. And whenever we reconstruct these memories, the brain tinkers with them, strengthening, weakening, or modifying different aspects of the memory from the moment they are pulled up. The constructive and malleable nature of memory explains the ways in which our memories can be distorted, sometimes leading us to colossal errors, such as when news anchor Brian Williams mistakenly recalled being in a helicopter that was shot down over Iraq. Our brains are susceptible to distorted memories by design, and the reason is the world around us is constantly changing, so we need to update our memories to reflect these changes. If you catch someone you thought was trustworthy in a lie, or if you got food poisoning after a tasty dinner at a new sushi restaurant, you'd want to adjust your recollections based on that new information. But although our memories are not photographically accurate, there is an upside to memory updating. Many of us have experienced traumas or experiences that are laced with unpleasant feelings. Because we can adaptively revise memories, we can reframe how we feel about them by incorporating a new perspective. And in doing so, we can update painful memories so that they can be tolerated or even provide us with valuable lessons that we can carry into the future. Insight number three, embrace the struggle. Our computational models of how the brain works suggest that the brain is wired to learn more when we make mistakes or when we face challenges. And this is a phenomenon called error-driven learning. Now, this simple principle can explain the conditions under which we learn best and the conditions under which we retained what we have learned over the long haul. In other words, it can help us avoid forgetting. Now, we know that every time we recall a memory, that memory can be updated. That's where error-driven learning comes in. We think that attempting to recall a memory is like a stress test. And if your brain struggles to do it, then once you get the answer, the brain tries to repair the coalition of neurons that's responsible for pulling up that memory so that the next time it can come up more easily. Error-driven learning explains the benefits that come when we actively learn by doing rather than when we passively learn by memorizing. And it helps explain why students benefit much more from practice tests than by simply studying. This is one of the reasons why students are generally better at retaining information after they have been tested than they are if they just study the material over and over again. Now, the implications of error-driven learning are potentially huge. When a student finds coursework to be difficult, people assume that they are poor students. But the reality is, if you're coasting through school, you might not be learning very much. So we should normalize mistakes and failures in education, and we should incentivize constant improvement instead of rewarding success. Rather than emphasizing mastery, we should celebrate the struggle, working to learn rather than proving that you have learned something. Insight number four, flex and protect your prefrontal cortex. We tend to focus on our shortcomings when it comes to memory, but we do a pretty good job of remembering what we need to remember thanks to the prefrontal cortex, an evolutionary newcomer that takes up about a third of the real estate in the primate brain. The prefrontal cortex is often described as a central executive, meaning that it coordinates activity across different neural networks in the service of a goal. This region plays a starring role in many of our everyday memory successes and failures. First, it allows us to focus on what is relevant and filter out distractions, which allows us to create rich and detailed memories that stand out from the clutter of our more mundane experiences. Second, the prefrontal cortex allows us to mobilize strategies to learn efficiently, like the kind of strategies that memory athlete Yenja Wintersoul used to memorize the entire IKEA catalog in 1 week. Third, the prefrontal cortex gives you the mental resources to think critically when you recall an event, so that your recollections do not become distorted. Fourth, the prefrontal cortex allows you to deploy your memories in real time to anticipate what's about to happen next. And I think the ultimate example of this is NBA legend LeBron James, whose exceptionally detailed memory for past basketball games allows him to rapidly read what's playing out on the court and to predict what's going to happen next. Unfortunately, the functioning of the prefrontal cortex declines as we get older, and we end up making things even worse when we're multitasking, stressed out, or not sleeping enough. Frontal function is also affected by physical health conditions like cerebrovascular disease, diabetes, and long COVID, and also by mental health conditions like depression and PTSD. Fortunately, we can improve frontal function through physical exercise, mindfulness practices, eliminating environmental distractions like text and email alerts, and compensating for sensory problems like by using hearing aids if you have hearing loss. Insight number five, diversify your brain's training data. The most advanced artificial intelligence products that we have right now gradually acquire knowledge by plowing through massive amounts of training data that's generated, annotated, and curated by humans. Humans, in contrast, get our own training data from lived experiences, and we go to different places and we interact with different people. Humans can learn faster because we supplement our knowledge with episodic memory, the ability to travel back in time to past events. Episodic memory allows us to use our unique experiences to rapidly update our knowledge and flexibly adapt to new situations. We can get the most from episodic memory by diversifying our training data. That is, if we give ourselves a change of scenery from time to time and expose ourselves to people from diverse backgrounds and perspectives, we can form richer, more distinctive episodic memories that are more likely to last. Conversely, when we spend too much time interacting with the same people in the same places and situations, we have impoverished memories. For instance, during the pandemic lockdowns, as we spent each day sitting in the same room, interacting with the same people, mostly over screens, the days just seemed to go on forever. And yet, by the end of the week, we were left with few memories of what we did during that time. In the age of generative AI, we can expect that there will be a premium placed on idiosyncratic human creativity and innovation, which emerges from the process of integrating elements from past experiences. By exposing ourselves to a diverse range of people and ideas, we can discover new connections and recombine our episodic memories into new imaginative constructions that transcend the sum of their parts. Well, that's it. Those were the top five insights I wanted to share with you. But there's a lot more in the book, and I hope you get a chance to read it, and I hope you enjoy it and find it to be a memorable read. Thank you for listening.
Thank you, Charan. That was five big ideas from Why We Remember, Unlocking Memory's Power to Hold On to What Matters by Charan Ranganath. You might also like our book bite for Why We Forget and How to Remember Better, The Science Behind Memory by Andrew Budson and Elizabeth Kenzinger. I'm Michael Kovnat. Have a great day.